One of the most highly anticipated movies of the spring opens this Friday. A Wrinkle in Time stars Oprah Winfrey, Reese Witherspoon, Mindy Kaling, and Storm Reid as the heroine, Meg Murray. Meg is a bit of a problem child. She's struggling with the disappearance of her scientist father, but with the help of three mysterious beings, she goes on a journey to look for him. Her little brother and a schoolmate come along as they travel to faraway planets where creatures speak strange languages.
Can you help us find him, please?
I can't tell what they're saying.
I can. They speak color.
Before it was a film, A Wrinkle in Time was a much-loved children's book by Madeline L'Engle. Margaret Willison is here to help us take a look at the legacy of that book. She's a librarian, a culture writer, and a frequent guest on NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour. Margaret, welcome to Here and Now.
Hi, Peter. Thank you so much for having me.
Let's go back to 1962, when this book was published more than 50 years ago now. It was rejected by 26 publishers before somebody picked it up. Why?
Well, because they had no idea how to categorize this book. It's dealing with kind of advanced theoretical physics ideas. It's written for a young audience, and it stars a girl. And publishers just had no idea how it would work. And Madeline L'Engle famously said, adults can't understand it, but children absolutely can. Her kids would sit and listen to her tell the story night after night, and they loved it, and they wanted more of it. And the science stuff that's so daunting for an adult brain, they just took on faith and could wrap their head around these very complicated ideas.
You mentioned the character, of course.
Is of a girl. Course.
The main character is
Meg
a girl.
Meg Murray.
The author is a woman. I mean, it was 1962.
Yeah.
Do you think that that was a significant portion of the fact that it wouldn't get picked
that
up?
That was a huge, huge issue. She was really one of the first female leads in a science fiction narrative ever. And people just did not think you could sell a hard sci-fi story with a 14-year-old girl at the center.
Tell us about Meg Murray. She is so smart. She can do math equations like in her head like that.
Well, she's very smart, but in a way that a rigid school system is very, very poorly designed to recognize.
Mm-hmm.
So she is, in fact, extremely smart and extremely advanced, but she goes to school and she feels dumb and she's getting terrible grades and she's honestly in danger of being kept back because her mathematical stuff is so advanced that her teachers don't know how to get her to do math at the level of her classmates. And conversely, she cannot bring herself to care about anything that is not math or science. The humanities stuff, memorizing the major exports of Nicaragua or the location of Pakistan holds absolutely no interest for her, and she can't retain that information at all.
So here's Meg, who is intelligent but has problems at school. But there's something else going on there. She also would not be considered pretty by her classmates.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons the book endures so much is because Meg is one of the few outcasts in children's literature that actually struggles with the stuff kids who are isolated from their peers struggle with. Part of that is the fact that she's just sincerely homely. But the other part of that is that she's so incredibly vulnerable.
Hmm.
Where other kids can kind of keep their feelings in and control themselves, Meg is just this open nerve, this beating heart of feelings, emotions, protectiveness. And so I think it's really meaningful to see a kid struggle with this quality that 14-year-olds, like,
you know,
nothing
it.
Is
yeah.
worse.
You know that feeling.
Yeah. yeah. And throughout the entire book, she doesn't really seem special. Her little brother is incredibly special. He's a telepath. He's a genius. But Meg just seems kind of normal and awkward. Mm-hmm. And what you learn at the end is that it's actually this thing that holds her back so much in life, this inability to keep her compassion to herself, to keep her feelings contained.
Yeah.
That's what lets her save the world.
Do you remember reading this book as a girl?
Yes, absolutely.
I remember. Did you like
reading it? I loved it. I'm also named Margaret, so I had a certain egotistical boost to share the name with the main
you
character.
You could relate.
I could relate. But it's also, it's a really transporting adventure.
I want to talk to you more about the era again that it was written in. I think this is important.
Mm-hmm.
1962, the middle of the Cold War.
Yeah.
and I bring that up because it matters in the book. I mean, there is an allegory buried there somewhere.
Absolutely. And it's the kind of thing where reading it as a child, it doesn't register at all. The same way you wouldn't notice that Aslan is a Jesus figure in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
It's by C.S. Lewis, who was a Christian writer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And in this, when you're a child and you visit the alien evil planet of Kamazots, you notice this conformity that is absolutely universal among all of the people there. But it hits you at a much more grade school kind of level where when you're 10, you're 11, you're finally reckoning with how socially important it is to be like everyone else and how absolutely impossible it is to be like everyone else. So you just put it into those terms. But when you read it with an adult eye and you think about 1962 and you think about the Cold War, especially the way that society is organized in Kamazots, where no one has any individuality and everyone is tapped into a sort of collective mindset.
A statement against communism, essentially.
Yes, it is a very anti-communist narrative.
Yeah. Do you think it'll translate into modern times in a film?
Yes, I think it will, because the issue of conformity versus individuality, even separated from a Cold War metaphor, still has so much resonance. And the visual idea of conformity is so strong and easy to convey. Mm.
Now, as you know, whenever a film is made on a book from childhood, you're going to have legions of fans who had a vision of what their favorite characters looked like in their heads from that time, right? Well, something interesting is happening in this film because it is a multiracial cast and Meg comes from a biracial family. How do you think people will respond to that aspect of this?
I may be in a privileged circle, but I've seen primarily extreme excitement about the fact that this story that's been such a touchstone for so many people for so many generations is broadening its horizons and making some of the stigma that Meg faces in the book, grounding it a little bit more in stigma that real children are facing today, fighting back against racism, fighting back against stigma of biracial relationships and all of that kind of stuff. It's giving some of her outsider status even more weight in today's society than it would have had naturally. And the complete imagining that Ava DuVernay is bringing to the story.
The director, right.
Is so thorough and so beautiful and so well thought out that even if she's creating a world that's a little bit distinct from what you might have gotten on the page in Madeline L'Engle, it's so cohesive and it has such a perfection of vision that I think people are really ready to be transported by it.
Yeah. A Wrinkle in Time opens this weekend in theaters. And we've been speaking with librarian and culture writer Margaret Willison. Margaret, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me, Peter.